Hey, everybody. Hey, welcome back to the New World Out of Order. I apologize for not having a podcast published in the last couple of weeks. I've had an illness in the family that's kept me away from home for about 2 weeks, but everybody's doing okay now. I'm actually getting ready to hit the road again, this time for business, and I'll be away for probably 2 months, coming home on the weekends, but and I'll, you know, do my best to squeeze out podcasts on the weekends, but anyway, I appreciate you guys bearing with me. Like I say, apologize for the void there for about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. Hey, this time we're going to be doing something a little bit different, and I'm a little pressed for time, and I've kind of thought about doing this anyway, and this being pressed for time today is going to help me, you know, go ahead and move into this. And what I want to do is start having some podcasts, starting with this one, that is going to be dealing with current news, current affairs. And so we're going to cover several different topics, news articles, and as opposed to, you know, normally we just cover one article or one subject, and we, you know, I try to give, you know, a history and a background and an explanation of that particular subject. So anyway, this time we're going to do current events and kind of, you know, read some articles here, give you the authors of these articles. I'll post these articles on the website. In the order that I'm going to be going through them on the podcast here. The website is nwo3.com, nwo3.com. Just click on the podcast in the menu, and it'll take you to podcast page, and you can review and or all the podcast articles and or listen to each of the individual podcasts. So anyway, let's go ahead and get started here. The first article up is titled Washington Leads World into Lawlessness, and this is by a guy named Paul Craig Roberts. Paul Craig Roberts, let me tell you just a little bit about him. Bio page here. He was a former Assistant Secretary of U.S. Treasury and former Associate Editor of the Wall Street Journal. It's got a good article here. It's on LouRockwell.com is where I picked it up at. And it talks about how the U.S. government pretends to live under the rule of law, to respect human rights, and to provide freedom and democracy to citizens, but, you know, Washington's pretense and the stark reality are diametrically opposed. To give you an example, you know, Washington violates the human rights of its own citizens. Washington has suspended the civil liberties guaranteed in the U.S. Constitution and declared its intention to detain U.S. citizens indefinitely without due process of law. And President Obama has announced that he, at his discretion, can murder U.S. citizens whom he regards as a threat to the U.S., and he can do that on U.S. soil. Now, these two things, of course, being able to detain American citizens without due process of law indefinitely, what he's referring to there is the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, that was signed at the end of last year. There again, I, you know, reviewed this in an earlier podcast, but just kind of to sum it up again, the NDAA is a bill that's passed every year, and it provides the budget for the military. This year, and I think it was actually signed on December 31st, 2011, there was an additional portion in there which actually allows the U.S. military to arrest and detain U.S. citizens indefinitely without charge or trial. And, of course, the other piece that he's talking about is that, you know, President Obama has announced that he can murder U.S. citizens, and that started with murdering a U.S. citizen who had converted to Islam but still was a U.S. citizen in the Middle East, and you know, that's as opposed to arresting and detaining and extraditing the guy back to the United States. They just went ahead and killed him. And since then, like I say, it's come out in a session of Congress that Leon Panetta was testifying before Congress, and I forget the actual purpose of his being there, but anyway, Alabama Representative Jeff Sessions was questioning his ability to enter into armed conflict in Syria without the approval and of Congress. And, of course, you know, Panetta says that he had already gotten approval from UN and NATO, and that he was going to inform Congress as to what they were going to be doing. And, of course, to Mr. you know, Sessions' credit, he pretty much went ballistic and said, you know, you got to be kidding me. You guys are doing this without Congress, and this is absolutely in violation of the Constitution. So anyway, talking about those items, I'm going to get back to the article here, and with those two items, you know, that were presented in, actually those were actually even presented in mainstream media, the Congress did not respond to these extraordinary announcements with any impeachment proceedings. There was no uproar from the federal courts, the law schools, or the bar associations. Glenn Greenwald from Salon.com reports that the Department of Homeland Security harasses journalists who refuse to be, you know, prostitutes, people, journalists that actually follow the orders from, you know, the upper echelon of the federal government. So it's, you know, it's really quite surprising that these kind of things can happen in the American public, you know, much less the Congress. They don't even raise an eyebrow, you know, and this is some of the most flagrant violations of the Constitution with, you know, extreme potential impact on each and every American citizen. And it just goes to show you that, you know, people, you really have to stop allowing the government to dumb you down. You really, really have to start thinking for yourself. And when you hear things like this, when you hear the Congress actually questioning and asking point blank, you know, the head of the FBI, Mueller, you know, hey, listen, is it legal for you to kill American citizens on American soil? And Mr. Mueller, actually, he responded by saying, you know, I'm not sure. I'll have to check into that. And, you know, when I heard that, I did. I went ballistic. I was going like, you've got to be kidding. This guy still has his job. Okay, so that's we have to stop. When we hear things like this, we have to immediately, if nothing else, write our congressperson and let them know how much this bothers us, and we want to know what their reaction is going to be. And if they don't give you a response, you need to demand a response, because we need to know how our representatives are responding to this. And if they, you know, choose not to respond, or they just choose to kind of blow it off, then, you know, we need to let people know about that. That's the kind of people we've got to get out. So anyway, I'm not going to get too wrapped up in any, try not to get too wrapped up in any, you know, one article, but, you know, this article on, is Washington Leads World into Lawlessness. It's, you know, I'm going to put it on the website. I would encourage everybody to read it. And it really reminds me of, there's a great video out there. I'm sure a lot of people have already seen it, especially, Occupy Wall Streeters. You know, it's, I believe it's, I will not move, or I am not moving. And I'll put this on the website as well. If you haven't seen it, I think I've already have it out there somewhere, but, it's great. And it actually shows you the hypocrisy of, you know, our government as it's, and how it assumes that, you know, we as American citizens are stupid people. And for the most part, we are, unfortunately, we're stupid in that we actually trust our government. But anyway, this video brings it, you know, straight to you that, you know, while the government's telling other governments of the world, such as, you know, Egypt and Bahrain and Libya and Syria, to allow democracy and stop, you know, torturing their citizens and beating their citizens and not allowing a freedom of speech, you know, it's actually showing the repression of all of those things that they're talking about within the United States at the same time. So it's a good little video. I'll put it up on the website. So, okay. The next one is demise of peak oil. I'm not sure if a lot of people know what really peak oil is. You know, peak oil is supposed to tell everybody that, you know, the world has, we've reached the maximum output that that the world can produce in oil. In other words, they can't, there's no more oil that can be taken out of the earth, or there's, we cannot increase the current rate of oil extraction over and above what we have today. That's peak oil. So, you know, they're saying from here into the future, the actual production rate will start reducing. And, you know, that's just a flat out lie. And it was, this was actually orchestrated, and it's been tried before. There was a, you know, peak oil that was declared actually back in the 72, you know, oil crisis. And I'm going to refer to an article called The Demise of Peak Oil by David Deming. And it says peak oil is a theory that the production history of petroleum follows a symmetrical bell-shaped curve. You know, once the curve peaks, decline is inevitable. The theory is commonly invoked to justify the development of alternative energy sources that are allegedly renewable and sustainable. Now, peak oil theory was originated by American geologist King Hubert. In 1956, Mr. Hubert predicted that U.S. oil production would peak between 1965 and 1970. When production peaked in 1970, it was interpreted as proof that Mr. Hubert's model was correct and that U.S. oil production had entered a period of inexorable and irreversible decline. Unanswered was the question of whether or not U.S. production had declined simply because it had become cheaper to purchase imported oil. Well, you know, the peak oil theory, like I say, it's just, it's kind of been reproduced over the years. It says, you know, for at least 100 years, people have repeatedly warned that the world is running out of oil. In 1920, the U.S. Geological Survey estimated that the world contained only 6 billion barrels of recoverable oil. But to date, we have produced more than 1,000 billion barrels, or 1 trillion barrels, and currently have more than 1.5 trillion barrels in reserve. World petroleum reserves are an all-time high. The world is awash in a glut of oil. Conventional oil resources are estimated to be in the neighborhood of 10 trillion barrels. The resource base is growing faster than production can deplete it. In addition to the conventional oil, the U.S. has huge amounts of unconventional oil resources that remain untouched. The western U.S. alone has 2 trillion barrels of oil in the form of oil shales, and that's in the Bakken, primarily in the Bakken reserves. At a current consumption rate of 7 billion barrels a year, that's a 286-year supply. So 9 years ago, Mr. Deming predicted that the age of petroleum has only just begun. The peak oil theorists, the Malthusians, the environmentalists were all wrong, and they've been proven wrong over and over again for decades. A tabulation of every failed prediction of resource exhaustion would fill a library. So now, don't get me wrong here. You know, petroleum extracted from the earth is a non-renewable resource. And do we need to continue, or do we need to wean ourselves off of oil? Absolutely. We need to get off of oil. We really do. It's just a no-brainer. It's the pollution that it produces is not good for humans. It's not good for the environment. But it is just a scare tactic, and it is a marketing ploy to declare this as peak oil. It's absolutely not true. You know, currently, the you know, as I'm recording this, which is on the 22nd of April, the demand for oil is down, but the price is continuing to rise. You know, we're the average price right now for a gallon of gasoline in the U.S. is above $4 a gallon. It's continuing to rise. We've had articles from or interviews from a minister of oil resources in Kuwait, you know, trying to, you know, tell everybody that he doesn't have an explanation for the increase in the price of gasoline because the demand has gone down, and you know, that there is no reason why the gas prices are going up. Likewise, one of the Saudi Arabian oil ministers had a very similar interview saying that he doesn't understand. He goes, this goes against basic economics. The demand is down, the supply is up, and the price is continuing to go up. So that just lets you know it's actually Wall Street speculators that are raising the price of oil. And anybody that's really in the know of what's going on in the world as far as the New World Order and stuff, the petroleum industry is the leading industry, outside of banking, but the banking being the backbone and the founding force of the New World Order. But the petroleum industry is the next largest industry that is allowed to essentially to rape the earth. And it knows it can, as long as it can keep people on oil. And of course, that's one of the biggest deceptions is, the oil companies say they promote alternative energy and the research into alternative energy solutions and things like that. But in actuality, they do not. They actually suppress any of those types of alternative energy research. And like I said, those things are just very easy to look up. So okay, that was demise of peak oil, and it's actually false. Now here's one I'm gonna is always near and dear to my heart, and that is the International Monetary Fund, along with the World Bank. But a good friend, Christine Lagarde from International Monetary Fund. This was years ago. I mean, not years ago. This was about a year ago. This was about a month or 2 months after Miss Lagarde took over as the head of the International Monetary Fund after Dominic Strauss-Kahn was kicked out because of the faked rape attempt, I guess, of the hotel cleaning person in New York. And of course, if you weren't aware that was fake, please go out there and check that out. That was definitely contrived. It's even been admitted that it was contrived. But here was an article, like I say, approximately a year ago. I actually take it back. This was 2008. Anyway, this is Miss Lagarde. I believe that today the IMF has adequate resources. And she's talking about resources to help bail out IMF member countries from bankruptcy. So the United States said an increase was unnecessary, an increase in reserves within the IMF. Asked what she considered an adequate level of resources for the International Monetary Fund, Lagarde declined to give figures. Rich and emerging G20 economies meeting in Paris committed to ensuring that the IMF has adequate resources to meet its responsibilities, and said they looked forward to debating the issue during the G20 summit. What is essential is that the IMF's resources are adequate to face the needs of its members in dealing with the crisis. The IMF chief had said in Washington last month that the fund's lending capacity pales in comparison with the potential financing needs of vulnerable countries and crisis bystanders. And on Saturday, she again warned that the global economic outlook has deteriorated since the G20 meeting in Washington, and the weakness of advanced economies was beginning to hit emerging countries as well. But the gist of the article here is that she is saying that the IMF has adequate resources to bail out or to support the needs of member countries. And I knew that was going to be, I thought that it was going to be detracted, really, and that's why I actually saved that article. And sure enough, here, I think it was actually last week, we have another response from the International Monetary Fund. I'm going to read this article. This article is titled, IMF Insists Austerity Drive Must Be Intensified, and this is by Nick Beams on April the 19th. Austerity, now please listen to this and listen closely, and I hope that everyone out there understands the term austerity. If you don't in the United States, the austerity measures is essentially measures that the government encourages and almost forces its citizens to take in order to help out in a economic difficulty. Okay, in other words, you have to buckle down. You have to stop using so much. You have to stop heating your house or cooling your house as much, and you have to stop driving as much, and you have to stop eating as much, and you just everyone has to buckle down and suffer some. And in the United States, the term that they use is not austerity as much as it is in other parts of the world. But here we use the term QE for quantitative easing, and that is a term that the Federal Reserve uses. And we've had QE, we've had QE2, we've had QE3, quantitative easing 2 and 3. Okay, let me get into the article here. Austerity policies aimed at systematically lowering the living standards and social conditions of the working class must be intensified, even as governments continue to hand out hundreds of billions of dollars to the banks. This is the central message contained in two major reports published by the International Monetary Fund this week in advance of the IMF's spring meeting this weekend. The continuing austerity program was set out Tuesday in the IMF's World Economic Outlook, which made clear there was no prospect of what was once considered a normal pattern of economic recovery. The Global Stability Report, published Wednesday, noted that European banks intended to cut their balance sheets by $2.6 trillion, dealing a major blow to business credit and household borrowing, and prompting a call by IMF chief economist Oliver Blanchard for further government-funded bank bailout operations. Both reports serve to underscore that the collapse of Lehman Brothers in 2008 and the ensuing financial crisis represented not a conjunctural downturn from which there would be a genuine recovery, but rather a breakdown in the capitalist order leading to a fundamental restructuring of social and economic relations. Nearly 4 years later, that restructuring is being ruthlessly pursued, and even more dire consequences for the working class. In its World Economic Outlook, the IMF warned that world growth will fall from the already low level of 4% to 3.5% in 2012. Okay, I'm not going to read the whole one. I will post the whole article on the website, nwo3.com. But just for kind of review here what these first couple of paragraphs said, the IMF is stating that the austerity policies aimed at systematically lowering the standard of living and social conditions of the working class must be intensified. In other words, your life is going to get harder. Your standard of living is going to go down, and your net worth is going to go down. And that is of the working class. This is not of the investment class or the bankers class. This is people like you and me. And so they're saying that the pinch, that the banking society is putting on citizens is going to worsen. And they're also telling you that, the continuing austerity program was set out Tuesday, made clear there was no prospect of what was once considered a normal pattern of economic recovery. They're laying the groundwork here, and they're telling you nicely and subtly right here, essentially, that there's not going to be an economic recovery. I know that's not the words they use, and I'm reading a little bit into that. I understand, but once you know about how these guys work, once you know how they start, talking about a subject, before really concentrating on it, this is what they're saying: there's really not going to be an economic recovery. Okay, just to me, just utterly shocking, and the IMF to me. One of the worst, absolutely corrupt, associations, along with the World Bank in the country. Just go back and do some research on the benefits of the IMF. There's very little to the world, to the third world countries they're supposed to be helping out. Okay, let me move on here. Like I said, that was the IMF insists austerity drive must be intensified. All right, now we'll move on here. We've got a new federal agency that is operating without a budget ceiling. And this article is a new federal agency, OFR, stirs Orwellian fears. And this is by James Rosen. And they're talking about the OFR, which is the Office of Financial Research. Let's just read a little bit here. It is the most powerful federal agency you've never heard of. And lawmakers from both parties on Thursday vowed to keep abreast of its astonishing growth and rein it in if necessary. This article is from April the 19th. The Office of Financial Research was created by the Dodd-Frank Financial Services overhaul that President Obama signed into law July 2010. Technically housed under the Treasury Department, the agency has until now received its funding not from Congress, but directly from the Federal Reserve. Now, people that know what's going on, that should raise both of your eyebrows right there. Because we know that the Federal Reserve is a private agency. We know that the Federal Reserve is the absolutely most corrupt, worst thing that's ever happened to this country. So if this department is being funded directly from the Federal Reserve does not give money to anybody that it does not expect to make a tenfold of money in return. Anyway, so this department, if the Office of Financial Research, OFR, has until recently been funded not by Congress, but directly from the Federal Reserve. Back to the article. Starting in July, the OFR fiscal year 2013 budget, estimated at $158 million, will be funded entirely through assessments, also known as taxes, on bank holding firms with consolidated assets worth at least $50 billion. So it's supposed to be funded from taxes levied against bank holding firms of at least $50 billion. But as became clear on Thursday's hearing by the House Financial Services Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigations, a close reading of the law the President signed provides no limit on the growth of OFR's budget, nor on the taxes the agency can impose on big banks to fund it. Okay. We'll call you on it, said Representative Michael Capano of Massachusetts, warning what would happen if he and his colleagues see the agency growing too large. Yet the Congress's prospects for doing that are at present limited, as it holds no power of the purse over OFR. Detractors call it the CIA of financial regulators and conjure Orwellian visions of omniscient, Soviet-style central risk manager. So, anyway, I'm sure if you're like me, you had never heard of the Office of Financial Research. And as of today, I still do not know their purpose. What is their purpose? What are they trying to accomplish? What are they doing that necessitates $158 million budgets? What are they spending that money on? So I don't know. I encourage everyone to go out there and look into it and provide me some feedback here. Just check out the website and get on the contact list and shoot me an email. And because anything that you guys find, I'd love to find out. In the meantime, I'll be doing my own research into that as well. Okay, I'm going to move on here to an article that this one should definitely piss you off as well. USAID training foreign workers for English-speaking jobs. And anyway, the article says, while the president has been urging insourcing, the government has been sending money to the Philippines to train foreign workers for jobs in English-speaking call centers. According to a New York Democrat Representative Tom Bishop and North Carolina Representative Walter Jones, this is unacceptable and shocking. The pair are calling on the United States Agency for International Development, also known as USAID, to immediately suspend what is known as the Job Enabling English Proficiency Program, or in other words, JEEP. According to Jones's office, in 2010, after the two men compelled USAID to end a similar training program in Sri Lanka, the agency assured the congressman that they would conduct a review to ensure the project will not take away any jobs from Americans. I believe it was reasonable to conclude from that statement that your agency's outsourcing training program was terminated, particularly in light of President Obama's insourcing initiative announced earlier this year, the pair wrote. Therefore, I was shocked to learn that USAID has used taxpayer dollars to invest in outsourcing training programs in the Philippines at the expense of American workers. According to Bishop, more than 4.5 million Americans are currently work in call centers, but since 2007, more than 500,000 call center jobs have been outsourced to foreign countries. So that should get you upset, you know. But this is how they operate. You know, the government tells you one thing, that hey, that listen, we're promoting insourcing, we're really trying to do what we can to increase jobs over here, and that's what they say. But their actions, what they actually do, is opposite. And of course, to the people that are maybe just becoming aware or not aware of what's really going on here, you know, it's not just that, you know, government is just stupid and they say one thing and do another. No, this is all intentional. It's all by design. This is all, you know, part of the dissolving the U.S., the United States, the Constitution, and forming, you know, one of the steps on the way to the to a one world government, a one world economy. You know, the government's going to be, they're doing what they can at the direction of the Council on Foreign Relations to destroy the country. And, you know, at the same time, they're telling the American citizens that what they're doing is trying to save the country. And so they know from history that most people will not look into this, and they'll believe whatever their government tells them. But you don't have to dig deep at all. In fact, you don't really even have to dig. You just have to actually look, and you'll find it's very obvious what's going on here. Anyway, that's just another example of what they're doing. Another thing I want to just cover real quick here, and that is the huge spy center that NSA is building out in Utah. I just want to bring this to everybody's attention. I encourage everyone to check this out. Like, where once again, go jump on my website, nwo3.com, check out this article, but keep going. You know, don't just read this article. Please start looking into this and any other thing you read on my website. Make sure you continue to investigate it. They have a large, ultra-secret spy center that's being built in Utah. It's supposed to be go online in 2013 at some time. The purpose is, and there again, this is unofficial, but the purpose is to intercept and analyze and decode, if necessary, any and all communications within the United States. Now, that's not just communications of suspected terrorists or anything. This is to intercept, analyze, and decode, if necessary, any and all electronic communications within the United States. So, and believe me, it's definitely true. If you doubt that, just do a search on some NSA whistleblowers, and there's a couple out there, and I can't recall the two primary guys' names right now, but they'll tell you they're ex-CIA guys, and they were way up in the CIA. It's not like they were, or NSA rather. And it's not like they were just, you know, low-level guys, but they became whistleblowers, and they'll tell you what's going on. So anyway, check that out, and like I said, once again, these articles are going to be on the website. I know this was a little hit and miss today. It's the first time that we've done a podcast like this, and I'll try to get it a little bit better organized. But listen, I appreciate you guys tuning in. Check out the news. Send me some news. If you guys hear about something, don't assume that I know it. Don't assume that anyone else knows it. Turn other people on to it, and use me as a resource to do that if you'd like. Send it to me. I guarantee I'll definitely mention it on the podcast. and at least give it some web space on the website. So please do that. Just go check out the contact page on nwo3.com. And I'd love to hear from you. All right, you guys take care, and I will hopefully be talking to you again in about a week.